Welcome to Top Dog Dynasty with your hosts, Karen Chanik, Adam Wilson, Chris Vanek.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. We are going to continue our conversation with Jordan McNamara because he's awesome and he's got a book and it's the real frickin' deal. That's what I'm saying right now. So, is everybody here? Adam, you here?
I'm still here.
Chris?
Present.
And Jordan?
I am here.
Awesome. So we're going to pick up where we left off last conversation and jump right into the book, man. The Analytics of Dynasty. You can find it on the website analyticsofdynasty.com/shop to buy your version of it. And I think Jordan will do some, you'll do a one-on-one session, strategy session. That's great, right?
Yep. We can do the one-on-one strategy session. You can get it. It's an option as well as the book for $50 on the site, or you can get the book itself for $30.
Right on. And where can they find you on Twitter, Jordan?
At McNamara Dynasty.
Boom. All right. You can find us at Top Dog Dynasty. I am at Quarter Hacks. Chris is at FF Crusher, and Adam is AJ Willie 2. And without further ado, I will hand it back to Adam to lead Jordan through his book. Go.
All right, while on break, Chris came up with his first good question of, I don't know, the entire time we've been doing this podcast. So, Chris, without further ado to you.
So, my question was, so you, I guess, preach the value of the backup running back role, and it's looking at the running back that has the clear path to a major role if the starter were to go down. But where does the pass-catching running back that maybe doesn't have a rushing role in the offense fit into that as well?
So I guess one way I would frame this conversation is the decision between Nyheim Hines and Kalen Ballage in rookie drafts. And, you know, I look at, right, I think that, you know, you look at Warp and you look at A-Warp and you sort of look at the two players, and a guy like Nyheim Hines, is he have a higher probability of hitting for a top 24 season than Kalen Ballage? Probably, I would say. But who has the ability to change your league?
Right.
And it's Kalen Ballage. And so, and again, if you, right, so if you think that, hey, it's only a, you know, maybe it's a 25% shot on Ballage, right? I think it's actually probably higher than that, but that he finishes a top 24 running back. But if you're sort of pessimistic on it and you think, well, you know, if I, you know, there's a good chance he busts, that may be true, but you're sort of looking at what you're comparing him to in the range that you're taking him. You know, you're comparing him to wide receivers that are typically day two receivers in the second round of rookie drafts. And you're comparing him to other running backs. I would rather take the swing on a guy that can change my league. And Kalen Ballage fits that profile. You know, James Conner fit that profile, right? David Johnson fits that profile. You know, these big guys that can catch and that can play three downs, and maybe they're not the most refined at being runners, but they're big guys that can catch, are highly productive in second round of rookie drafts. And so you sort of look at that, and I would much rather take a swing on a guy like Ballage. And you know what, if it's a 40% shot that he hits, right, which would be about what my thought would be, that he would produce, you know, it's about a 40% shot, he finishes a top 24 running back in his career. If you do a lot of that, if you're structuring your team and you're doing a volume running back approach and are rostering, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of these sort of backup running backs, and you're sprinkling, you know, there's room for James White's and Theo Riddick's and these types, but there's a ton of room for guys like Kalen Ballage in there, and you're taking, you know, the Rod Smiths and the Chase Edmonds and the all the one injury away guys. If they're 30 to 40% on their own, right? If you sort of stack a bunch of those on top of each other, your odds that you're going to hit are pretty good. And so I just sort of look at it that way. And I would rather structure my team as being a lot of those shots, because I think when those shots hit, they hit. We saw what James Conner did, right? I mean, that's the type of bet I think you want to make repeatedly in that range of the draft.
And so other people have to obviously know about this, you know. So I've actually come into contact with people that want these guys from me, even though I've hoarded them. And so there's obviously a price at what you will sell anything for. But when it comes time when someone else is trying to get them for you, do you make them pay a premium, or would you rather keep those types of players? That's the kind of struggle that I get into is if I get a good deal for one like 205 for Rod Smith. I mean, I don't really want to trade him, but at that price, you have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and everything has value, right? And you tell me what, and this might be my, you know, I actually talked to a guy that purchased my book. He's a lawyer, and I think he's in just outside of Chicago. And we were talking a lot about that question, right? Is, you know, well, how do you know? And his point to me, and this might just be sort of similar educations or mindsets or whatever, just sort of how we were trained professionally. You know, how do I feel about player X? Well, you tell me what the cost is, and then I'll tell you what I'll feel about player X, right? And so Rod Smith, you know, Malcolm Brown this offseason, if he doesn't get hurt, is he the CJ Anderson narrative? I think there's a very good likelihood that he was, right? He gets hurt and we sort of miss that boat, but I think the process was right on that. They were free, right? Mm-hmm. CJ Anderson was free for periods of time, was probably cut in shallow to mid-sized leagues, right? At that cost, I love them, right? If you're going to take, you know, Rob Kelly was a guy that I took as a rookie. You know, I had some of these split drafts where a couple of the rounds were in August. And this is actually detailed one, this trade in a book, where I basically took Rob Kelly in a fourth in 2017 and traded him for a second, right? And the second I was able to get Juju Smith-Schuster with, right? So that is, you know, from basically going to a late third valuation to an early second, right? That's a profit. And so, yes, I will trade anything at any time for the right price. But typically these guys, these backup running backs, you know, they're going 150 plus in ADP, right? Yeah. 200 plus. Ideally, you know, Rod Smith was free. Malcolm Brown was free. All of these guys were super cheap. And so at that cost, it's interesting to me. Now, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if for some reason the market changed, right, and people bought the book and sort of it changed the market, I don't think it's going to eliminate this value. But if that were to happen, then we'd have to reevaluate. But I don't think it's going to. And, you know, to the extent that they're not still values.
So what about when these guys hit? So say Zeke goes down, Rod Smith's the guy, he starts producing. Are you looking to cash in on those guys, or are you looking to just ride the value, or does it depend?
That's what they teach you, like the first day of law school, you answer every question with it depends, right? But it truly does, right? Is my team good? How will he help me? Is he now my sixth starting running back option, or is he my second, right? Because those things matter. You know, I had Carlos Hyde, and Carlos Hyde was doing some productive things at the beginning of the season. And I said, you know, I've got five running backs in front of him that would all have to go down. And if they all went down and Carlos Hyde was a starting option for me, I'm probably not winning anyways. I'll move on from him. I think I got an extra piece plus a 2018 first, right? And that sort of allowed me to then go back on the waiver wire and add another backup guy when I still was able to capture a ton of value for Carlos Hyde. In hindsight, it looks really good now. But at the time, it was a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because I was basically trading away a, quote, productive player for a asset I can't use. I don't view first round picks that way. I think I can use first round picks on any day of the year and get value for it if I need to. And that's sort of, so for me, a lot of that is, you know, is cost. You know, if there's a player, generally speaking, if there's a player outside the top 150, 200 picks in a startup draft, and then I can get a first round pick for them, I'm going to do it just because the value's right on that. You know, if there's a player in the late, you know, the late hundreds, you know, 175, 200 in that range, and I can get a second for them, typically I think you do it. And that's sort of would be how I would evaluate cashing out on those guys. And again, it's team specific. You know, where I had Damian Williams and I was short at running back, I couldn't, you know, I'm going to just embrace that and just try and win, you know. So that was sort of my, that's how I sort of processed those decisions.
That's the guy I was going to ask about, Damian Williams. It's a good example.
I think he's fascinating. I just, I can't, right, I, for so many reasons, I think it's, I think he's a fascinating conversation about how we value situation, about how we value cost, about how we value upside.
Scheme. And I sort of, Scheme, right?
All of those things. And just from a dynasty value perspective, like you look at, he's basically the last running back that you can say is a, has starter in startup drafts right now. That's a starter and that has difference making starting ability right now. And I generally think that you should break your starter, your startup drafts into two different categories. I think the first six rounds should be super safe. I think that they should be built on a core of stability that you don't want to miss, right? I say, you know, how you are in a startup draft and your goal should be not to miss in the first six rounds, right? You should be safe. Once you get outside of that, I'm more aggressive in terms of how I target some of these guys. And especially if I've sort of filled in with tight end and I don't have sort of needs at, you know, starter positions. I mean, those decisions factor into it a little bit, but I look at a guy like Damian Williams and he's fascinating, right? Because he's going basically between 75 and 80 in startup drafts, but he has, you know, top 12 running back upside. And, you know, the whole late first for Damian Williams, I think I'd rather just embrace Damian Williams for a late first right now. Like, I'd rather have Damian Williams, especially if he can help me. Now, would I trade him? I think a random 2020 first, excuse me, a random 2020 first round pick. I've said that I need to change how we say that because it's very confusing. So I'm going to start doing that. I think that that is a different conversation in terms of how we value that. I would be much more likely to take that pick than I would Damian Williams. But I think he's an interesting, I mean, I was on a show, we talked for, I don't know, 25 minutes about Damian Williams. I just think it's a really interesting conversation about how we should think about players.
Yeah, my thought on him is that I think he could very well hold his value, but I don't, necessarily, I think the likelihood of it going up is a lot less than the likelihood of it going down. So that's why I'm kind of trying to cash out, or I did cash out on the share that I had of him.
Yeah. And is there a chance that they draft somebody? I think that there is. Is there a chance that person takes Damian Williams' job? I think there is. I sort of come at it from that perspective, as well as the idea that, hey, if I'm getting if I'm getting 111 in a trade for Damian Williams, I mean, the odds of a running back hitting right around there are, it's about 50-50, right? And so I sort of look at that and I say, all right, well, if I have Damian Williams, how do I feel about that? And in a down class, I think I sort of knock that number down a little bit, right? Maybe it's closer to 35-40%. And, you know, do I think that Damian Williams can do that this year? I think there's probably a good chance that he could finish as a top 24 running back and sort of return that value. So, but I think it's interesting. I mean, but I get the other side too. If you hold Damian Williams and for some reason something happens, he is still an injury away. Right. Yeah. He's still right. He will quote lose market value, but he will still retain a ton of value in a volume running back build. So again, if an injury happens, he's going to probably roll right back into being the same job. And people talk about him like he's not a talent. I mean, he was in Miami. Miami traded Jay Ajayi, and basically we're going to roll with him and Kenyon Drake. And then Damian Williams gets hurt. You want to know what else happened in his career? Like, he was going to be a restricted free agent, and you know who was interested? The Patriots. What's that tell you, right? What are they good at? Evaluating running backs. So he basically loses out in Miami, and where does he end up? He ends up as a backup running back in Kansas City. You know what Andy Reid's really good at? Evaluating running backs. So I'm not, I wouldn't go overboard with following every coaching decision, but at the same time, when people are really good at one thing, we should embrace that. He keeps getting connected to really good evaluators of running backs. I think that should speak to us to a certain degree.
I had him on my team when he was in Miami too.
Yeah. One of the scenarios that I find myself in is, like, let's just say Damian Williams before the fantasy playoffs and before there was any Kareem Hunt news. when you find those players or when you're trying to acquire them, at what price are you trying to do it? So let's just say if this is week 10 of the season or week 8 and Damian Williams is on another owner's team, are you fine taking a future third and throwing them at guys like him, Malcolm Brown, you know, even maybe even Jalen Samuels this year? Are you fine doing that, or is that the valuation that you're trying to get these guys at, or is that even too much?
No, I typically am. I every week I sort of mine the waiver wire, and I think if you're in 25 man roster spots, right, I think there are attractive options. I mean, Rod Smith was one of them that just kept bumping onto the waiver wire, especially during bye weeks, right? Be really cognizant because people will have to cut people. And typically that's the type of player that gets cut. My goal this year was I identified that I wasn't a great waiver wire owner. I just, it wasn't something I was good at. It didn't really interest me a ton. Like, I forced myself to be better at it this year and drew a lot of value out of it. So that they're definitely gettable there. I think the back end of trades, and that's a hidden value too, right? So the thing I was talking about when I traded Carlos Hyde for a 2018 first, and give me back Malcolm Brown, right? Give me back John Kelly. Give me back, you know, Jalen Samuels or Damian Williams or whatever, right? Give me back some one of these. He's not going to be on your roster type of players to this other owner. And that's a great source of hidden value on how to acquire these guys. So I largely will target them as throw-ins on trades as well. But the third round, the future third round valuation, it depends on who it is. But I think you can do it cheaper than that.
I agree. So let's shift gears here to rookie picks. So we have our listener league, and one of the things that we found is, especially inexperienced players, they have issues with valuing the rookie picks. So what are some of your findings around rookie picks, their value, that kind of stuff?
I generally think now, so I'll say, let me say this first. I was able to identify basically
lawyer
an exchange
speak,
rate.
By the way.
Yeah, well, I think it's important for this conversation because when you're talking on Twitter and you see, oh, rookie picks are overvalued and all this stuff, I think the answer, of course, is it depends. I identified an exchange rate basically between rookie picks and startup picks, right? And what I was able to do was go back through 10 years of data and basically identify where a rookie ADP basically corresponded to what their startup ADP was, right? So okay. I was able to sort of go through that, you know, run some numbers, do some analytics on it, I guess, and identify basically an exchange rate. And so I did that, right? And compared the rookie picks at that particular value to the veterans, okay? And what I identified is I think that rookie picks are undervalued. That does not mean, you know, sell Julio Jones for 104, right? That does not mean, you know, ship off, you know, Brandon Cooks for a mid first, right? That's not what that means, right? It means that in the later part of the draft, really, it means that you're better off taking a rookie than a veteran, right? Or, you know, flipping these, that Carlos Hyde example, right? You're better off getting the liquidity and the upside of a future first than holding a guy like Carlos Hyde. That's what that means. And so the rookie picks at the corresponding values are better. They're better in terms of hit rate. They're better in terms of starter games. They're better in terms of seasonal finishes. And I think largely they're underpriced. And you, I did a Twitter poll, and I think it was around 70% of people said rookie picks are overvalued. Okay. That's just simply wrong. And maybe how people employ them is bad, but the value, the market value of them, they're underrated compared to how the veterans perform, especially when you're getting out of the elite players. And I'm talking specifically once you get out of the elite players, you're better off having the rookie picks. And the rookie picks, you'll notice, are basically two things. They are more variant, right? So that's good and bad, right? They have higher upside, but they have a lower floor than the veterans, but not as much as you would think, right? That it only increases the certainty by 5 to 10% is what I'll say. And so interesting to me is when you see guys like Philip Lindsay and you see guys that in two or three games vault up rounds and rounds and rounds of startup valuation. Those things shouldn't, right? You should almost invariably bet against them, because what you'll notice is when, even though you have more information, it doesn't make them significantly more predictive of future production. So people way overreact to market news. With all of that said, I think rookie picks, generally speaking, are undervalued, especially the future random pick. That's not particularly in my book, but that future random pick is undervalued by the
market. And that's what I was going to ask you about. How did you come up with what? Well, first of all, what is a random future first worth, and how did you come up with this?
So I hear these narratives, and it's just, I don't know if it's just who I am that I want to try and disprove them or what, but I sort of see these things that are just accepted as gospel. And there's a lot of things in the book that are accepted as true in Dynasty that just aren't true. They're just factually wrong. You know, the wide receiver value late in drafts in particular, everyone believes that, and it's just not true. That sort of is what spawned this. And so I went, and again, everything sort of comes back to warp, what we talked about earlier. You can measure rookie picks in warp, right? What do you expect them to be? And so I did 10,000 simulations on what a future rookie pick would be. And I actually, at the same time, I did a poll and didn't announce any of the information on Twitter. I just wanted to sort of see what everyone thought. And people, generally speaking, value them as late first round picks. So I think the plurality of people, something like 40-45%, said that they were picks basically between 108 and 112. Mm-hmm. And maybe another third of people said that they were, it was basically between 106 and 107, right? So the dead smack middle of the round. I actually identified that it's at 105, or just short of 105.
Okay.
And if you think about that, it's actually about 15% undervalued in terms of just being that, right? If you accept the random future first as being 106.5, basically between 106 and 107, it's actually the future random first is actually 15% more valuable than that. So you sort of think about that, right? That's a hidden valuation, and there's massive upside on that, right? There's a lot more upside. You know, 101, it means a lot more, right, than 102, and it means a lot more than 103, right? It's not just a linear line. It's actually it's a very steep drop off from the top couple picks. And the idea of getting a random shot at that actually weighs it more than, we should think about that heavier than it being 112.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think people struggle with, is that they don't see the difference between 101 and 103 and then 109 and 112, right? Like, they don't see how there's a bigger gap there. They think of them both as the same, whereas it seems like the talent gap, it kind of evens out the later you get. Does that make sense?
Oh,
so like there's a big gap between 101 and 103, and then there's also a big gap between 109 and 112, but that gap is smaller than the gap between 101 and 103.
100%. Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And so, and you'll notice that at positional scoring as well, right? It's a steep drop off at the top, and then it sort of graduals out, right? At wide receiver in particular. And so you sort of, that's not just unique to rookie picks. People don't think of it that way, but just look at Barkley. I mean, how much more expensive was he than 102, right? And people don't think about, you know, they don't think about that when it's a random future shot. But I'm trying to, you know, I'm going to start up right now where I'm embracing the idea of, hey, 2020 picks are going to be really highly valuable. And I haven't hurt myself in any meaningful way by trading down and accumulating two extra of them. That's a high, you know, it's, you don't know right now, but you know, at worst case scenario, I think if you take a running back, you're looking at a top, you know, you're looking at a top half of the round valuation, even if it's in the later part of the round, you know? So again, running backs, you know, there's basically two general rules. Rookie picks are undervalued and running backs over receiver. And if you sort of go with those two things, I think you'll be more profitable.
So what do you say to the teams that are the win now situation, where they are dumping their rookie picks and trying to get the players that will produce this year?
I think you got to look at the rule of seven, right? I mean, who are you acquiring, and what upgrade will they give you? Right. And, you know, people say, oh, I'm contending, I don't need rookie picks. Well, I don't think that that's true, especially if you can draft a running back, right? Because running backs can produce in year one, right? And one of the things I found in the book is that I actually think that you guys are Cleveland fans, you know this, that Nick Chubb gets drafted, right? He's behind Carlos Hyde, all this stuff. I was big on Kerryon Johnson. Similar things happen to both of them, right? Oh, they're not immediate starters. So their rookie draft ADP sort of fell, right, somewhere between, you know, 104 and 106 because, oh, they're not immediate producers. And, you know, Kerryon Johnson a little bit later than Chubb. Those guys, actually, if you look at them from AWARP, actually outproduced the top three in terms of running backs drafted in the top three picks of the rookie drafts. And is that an abnormality in the data? Maybe, but I don't think that you can undercount the fact that Kerryon Johnson, if healthy this year, could have been a league winner. Right, he gets hurt. He was coming into his own. He was a budding superstar. Joe Mixon a couple years ago. Right, same narrative. Right, that oh, he's stuck behind these guys in Cincinnati, and by the time the middle of the season comes out, he's sort of trending right and actually gets hurt. Chubb won people leagues. Right, you sort of look at all these things, and when those, I think those rookie picks, and especially running backs like in the fourth or sixth range, if they are falling because, quote, situation's bad, my data really points to them as being undervalued. And so I guess to follow on that, trading the pick, right? Maybe this year's the year to do it, but I don't, right? If you're just trading him for, it depends what the conversation is, right? If you're just trading him for, oh, I need a, you know, a veteran tight end, right? That doesn't move the needle, right? Mm-hmm. Go out and get Julio Jones, right? Go get, make something that's going to make a difference, right? Package a running back with a first to get Nick Chubb or Mixon or something. Do a big deal, right? Do it. If you're going to make a big dynasty trade, if you're going to do that, don't sell it off for running back three, you know, type of production, because that's just not, that won't help you as much as you think it does.
Cool. So the next thing, well, the final thing I want to talk about, your general strategy. So I want to talk about the strategy of team building that you think people should employ and what we talked about in the book. So let's take it from, let's just say a startup draft, the early rounds of startups. What should people be doing?
Not taking a ton of risk.
Okay.
Trade down. Don't take a ton of risk. And, you know, accumulate assets, right? Accumulate safe, dependable players, right? So don't take Philip Lindsay, right? Don't take big swings at the pinata, right? I'm all for taking big risks, but it's at the cost that we're taking them that is more important, right? I'm willing to take a big swing and a miss on running backs in the second round of rookie picks in rookie drafts, right? Because I think that generally speaking, they're undervalued and they have high upside, right? But you can't take big swings and misses on guys like Philip Lindsay or last year at this time, Ronald Jones, or, you know, name your sort of non-prototypical player, especially at running back, and taking these swings early on, right? You got to be super careful about doing that. So I tend to go towards safety. Last year at this time, I did a startup draft when I took Devontae Adams over Julio. Now, yep. It turned out really right, but for probably, you know, I got right for different reasons than I thought I made the pick. Devontae Adams finishes as wide receiver one, and I didn't really project that. That's not why I picked him. Mm-hmm. I picked him more. I thought he was, you know, Julio's continuously, constantly banged up. We could see a Calvin Johnson early retirement out of him, right? That was sort of a concern that I had because of just his chronic injuries and just how much of a beating he took. So I went with safety over what might have been some upside. Now, did I get bailed out with upside? Yes. But, you know, that was sort of the type of decision that I would employ. You know, guys like Brandon Cooks are ideal dynasty assets. 25 years old, long history of production, in a good offense, with a good quarterback, and high pick, right? All of those things. And he's undervalued, right? He's going, what, the third and fourth round of startup draft? That's crazy. Yep. I mean, he has finished no worse than 15th in the past four seasons. And he's going at that level in startup drafts. I mean, that's, to me, it's just screams value in terms of especially dependability. So if you can get wide receiver put away, you know, I'm in the super flex draft right now. I think if you're in a super flex draft or start to tight end draft, it's a little bit different because you're looking, you sort of expand your core rounds out maybe a couple more rounds, right? So I sort of look at super flex drafts and basically the first eight rounds are sort of my core building. You know, I want to try and hit 7 out of 8 of those rounds, mm-hmm. right? And if I can pick 9 or 10 times in that range, it helps me hit a lot more. So that's sort of what I like to do. And then, you know, as the draft goes on, I'm really going to transition into being running back heavy. And I meaning really, really transition that way. You know, 75-80% of my picks will probably be that. So that's sort of the transition that I would make. And that's usually, you know, if it's a start one, it's probably outside around 6. And if it's a start, if it's a quarterback super flex or start 2 quarterback, it's probably outside around 8 or 9.
Okay. So before we get to, you know, round 6 and beyond, so when you're talking about trading down, the gold standard, I think most of us know is, around 2, around 3, and a future first. For some reason, I look at, you know, I hear you saying this, that, you know, these trades that you've made, and you always, for some reason, start out with like a top 4 pick. So how is it that you do this all the time? Because every draft I'm in, I get like the 109 draft position, and then when you go to trade out like that, you can't get it. So how is it that you always manage to get draft picks in the top like 3-4 picks?
It's just dumb luck.
It's just dumb luck. Because I feel like it makes it easier if you're a top 2 or 3 pick to get your second, third, and future first. So
it is, yeah. And we were at 104, so we got a second, a fourth, and a future first.
Okay.
And one of the best parts about that, we got 2 different offers back. We got the second, third, or excuse me, we offered, that was actually the return offer we got. The initial offer we sent out was our first and our 10th for a second, third, and a future first. Okay. And he sent back, I'll give you the 4th and take out the 10th, which was actually great because that's actually a hidden efficiency because, you know, people think, oh, it's just a 10th round pick, but that's actually, it's actually some nice warp value in that sort of range. Mm-hmm. And that sort of saves some value in the trade. I really like it when I can add an additional pick, even if I got to take the pick that I'm getting back a little bit later. I actually like that. So, you know, that's something that I did. And then I cascade traded it. I basically got the pick and then I moved the second that I got back down again. I got 2 2020 first round rookie picks and I'm basically picking 6 times in the top 52. Right. So that's really how I like to go with it. And then sort of the players that I look at, you know, I think that you should really, when you're looking at how to build your team, I think you should go backwards first. Hey, identify what types of players that you like later in the draft, you know, and do it at all the positions. Hey, is there, you know, I'm in a super flex draft. How do I feel about guys like Tyrod Taylor or some of these, you know, maybe some of the later picks, you know, Mason Rudolph, those types, you know, analyze those guys and then sort of work your way up. You know, where's my drop dead point on getting a quarterback 2? You know, who do I feel good with as a quarterback 2? You know, sort of working my way back up in that range. And then I can identify, all right, well, now I know where I feel safe, where my bailout options are. If I got to reach a couple of rounds on a guy that, you know, like Matthew Stafford to be my quarterback 2, I sort of know that. And then I can make these decisions up at the top of the draft a little bit easier and feel pretty good about it. Based from a team build perspective. So that's really how I look at it and sort of build my teams from the back forward. And then once I'm at the beginning, hey, if I go 2 running backs in the first 2 rounds, how's that going to make my team? If I go running back wide receiver, you know, if I pass on quarterback, you know, I do those sorts of builds and sort of see what you think. And a lot of it is about being comfortable with what you do. You know, I am good at picking running backs. It's what I'm good at. And so I know that I can do that probably better than the market later in the draft. So I sort of embrace that and that matches with my analytics. So it's nice when those 2 things come in together.
So people love drafting so much. And I feel like a lot of people have never even attempted to trade out of round 1. And I will say like what Jordan's saying, and Jordan, you said it off air and maybe even on air about having like 6 picks in the top 52. It feels so good when you get to like the third round and you have like five of the next 20 picks and you look at the talent there and you're like, wow, I can literally hit on five of these guys. So like, I really think people should be at least trying it out, you know, trade out of round one and then trade out of one of your second round picks and trade back and like acquire more picks. People actually admire it from the outside. Like, man, I wish I had five picks in the next 20, like Adam does or whatever.
When you trade out of that first round and even maybe out of the second round too, mm-hmm. then people see that you're open for trading and then they'll keep knocking on your door and wanting to move up.
Yeah. That's another thing I don't think people think about. I am constantly moving back in trades. So basically every time I come up to pick in the startup I'm doing right now, I get at least two trade offers for the current pick. And so if there's not someone I like, I can at least move back and get in a range where I'm picking someone and I feel good about it.
Yeah. And I think, too, that you should be less certain of. I think people are overconfident in the decisions that they make. Right. So people think, oh, it's a first round pick. I'm going to hit. Right. And especially if it's at running back, there's a lot of risk there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I come at it from a perspective of I don't feel a lot of certainty about many things in life. And so if I sort of embrace that, right, there's not, I can't control how many touches that Todd Gurley gets.
Yeah.
I can't. And so there's things about, you know, we can study ad nauseum. We can study forever. I can quit my job and spend 18 hours a day studying players and analytics and tape and everything. But there's only so much that we can control. And so you're taking players in a vacuum where you can't control their destiny. And so that's inherently risky. And so I typically will, you know, view that as an opportunity to, hey, let's throw a lot of darts instead of trying to sharpshoot a couple. And one thing, too, is people that try and move up, and especially if you're playing deeper rosters, you know, deeper lineups, starting lineups, it's tough to move up in a draft and, you know, nail two running backs. It actually happens at a lot less frequent pace than people think. You know, the odds of hitting on basically two round one startup pick running backs as top 12 guys in the first round is less than 33%. Or in the first year is less than 33%. So people do it with, you know, 75% certainty, right? That's bad value. And, you know, so I just don't think life's that certain. So when I trade down and take a lot of shots, especially when it's deeper roster, deeper lineup, I think it's a lot of, you get a lot of opportunities there to really build a solid foundation. And again, you know, you talk about those future picks that you're going to get back. Those can really help you. And especially I've identified 2020 as being a good class. You know, mm-hmm. the running backs, you can add, you know, you can make a 2020 championship team rostering and starting probably multiple 2020 rookie running backs. And yep. So I sort of look at that and I think that, you know, I drafted a startup this offseason or last offseason where everyone was like, oh, you're tanking round year one. And I said, just wait. You know, I traded down a couple times and did this whole thing. I made the playoffs with relative yep. ease. And it was just because I made my back end of my roster really, really efficient. I had, you know, I think we started 11 guys in that roster and I was having six or seven running backs that I had the opportunity to choose from in a given week about who were starters. And just mm-hmm. doing that, you're going to be beating play other teams in just the efficiency game.
All right. So when, and you've touched on it a little bit. So when you get to round six and beyond, how are you handling it? Are you taking a quarterback high? Are you taking tight ends high? You know, the position that you're going to talk about, I'm sure, is running back and taking a bunch of them. But so how are you finishing out your wide receivers? How are you finishing out your the rest of your team? Let's talk about that some more.
Yeah, so I mean, this year for me, if I was going to be drafting a startup with its start one quarterback, I mean, I would identify basically, you know, if it's start two or three wide receivers, I would identify Sammy Watkins or Will Fuller as the ideal wide receiver four in round six. That would sort of be my goal, is to have wide receivers sort of locked away after that pick.
Yeah,
and then I would. You know, there's obviously room for a tight end or a quarterback or a running back in there. I generally think, especially in 6-point passing touchdown leagues, that quarterbacks are undervalued. I think, you know, people always punt and pass on quarterbacks. And that's not to say you should take Patrick Mahomes in the first round of your startup draft. But it's to say that, you know, some of these guys like Aaron Rodgers, I think right now is undervalued, right? And so if he's gonna fall into the sixth, seventh round, something like that, I think that's a value. So that would sort of be something that I would monitor. I think you can float a couple of running backs in there as well, you know, into that the rest of your lineup construction in the first six rounds. But you know, depending on the depth of your league, I think it's really important the construction of your roster, right? If you're playing tight rosters, you know, I talk to people that play these FFPC leagues where basically it's a 20-man roster and you basically have to cut to 14 after the season. And I think you got to keep a kicker and a defense, right? It's super important the roster construction that you employ. If you're keeping three quarterbacks, I mean, that's just a disaster in terms of what you could otherwise be doing at the position. So I would recommend, like, in those types of leagues, I want to pay a premium for stable tight end and a stable mm-hmm. quarterback, because then that allows me to sort of build out the depth of my roster that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise be able to do, and take a lot of those deeper shots on, you know, guys like Royce Freeman might be tight keeps in those types of ranges, but I want to be able to keep him instead of, you know, having, you know, Phillip Rivers and Matthew Stafford. Give me Rodgers, and then I can sort of keep a backup running back. That would sort of be my philosophy on that. I think the construction and what you're aiming to achieve is really important. But yeah, I mean, I think you can. I tend to find myself in a start one league going with either a quarterback high or a tight end high, because I think that allows your roster construction to really flow in an efficient way, because then you don't need to fill six spots to feel comfortable. You can use three or four, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of how I look at those decisions. And then I guess be careful going through the draft. I think there's clear, you know, there's some things I identified in the book about profiles to avoid. I think those are important to avoid later in the draft, to not get enamored by, you know, the young sort of the Ryan Tannehill type quarterback who hasn't broken out and is in his mid-20s. You know, that's an example from a couple years ago. You know, Trubisky might fit that type of decision making this year. You know, those types of players I tend to be off of and identify, basically, you know, like I said on tight end earlier, you know, basically, you know, elite young guys, right? Or depressed asset guys, right? So a guy like Evan Ingram is super interesting this year because I think his price is down. He's going as what, tight end 6, 7, 8, something in that range.
Yeah.
And here's a guy that's a first round tight end. They hit their highly productive historical players. He's a very good athlete, you know, and his price is beaten down for some reason because, you know, he got hurt and yet is going later than OJ Howard, right? I don't understand that. But, you know, those types of profiles is really what I'm trying to evaluate. And I think if you can sort of identify those, it'll allow you to be more efficient. And then I'm taking a lot of shots at running back, you know, like you said, and I'm taking shots at boom bust running back. I mean, I like boom bust receivers, but I like boom bust running back because the boom can really move the needle. You know, the James Conners, the backup running backs that, hey, if they hit, they can hit for massive, massive payoffs. I like those guys more than the pass catching guys.
So question on your team construction with the loading up on those running backs. So because maybe it's easier to find wins with those guys later in the season after injuries occur and whatnot, than maybe earlier on in the season when the starters are healthy, do you make any adjustments to your teams due to that factor?
You mean like early in the season, late in the season type running backs? No. Well, I mean, I guess it depends. I mean, I typically don't go into a season thinking that I have to win year one. If I win year one, that's great. And typically what I say is if I win year one, the league's in a lot of trouble because I haven't mortgaged my future to do it. So that's, you know, I'm not necessarily in a dynasty league, I'm not necessarily worried about the first 4 weeks of the season. But these things happen sooner than you expect, right? Kerryon Johnson becomes viable sooner than you expect. I mean, you know, James Conner, right? We spent 10 weeks worried, was this the last James Conner week? And, you know, through that whole time, we were winning games and racking up leads. So I don't necessarily think it's just especially when you're drafting this far out, I don't necessarily think it's you're mortgaging the beginning of your season. You know, I think you've got a lot of opportunities to sort of maximize your roster spot. I don't think if you're drafting at this point and drafting with this philosophy, I don't think you're mortgaging the beginning of your season.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we got out of startup drafts and we're heading into rookie drafts. So I know part of your book, or one of the things that you mentioned in your book is if you're not drafting in the top three, I believe this is a stat, if there's not a huge difference between 104 down to the mid-second round. And so is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about before, it's a gradual decline. I mean, it's a decline, mm-hmm. but it's gradual. And what you'll notice is the hit rates sort of dwindle a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. But you can still hit on guys in the second round. You know, you can still get guys there. What you'll notice is that the depth of the hit is lesser, right? So the guys that hit, you know, that are mid-first type rookie picks will tend to hit with more density or hit more often than guys that are you know, round two or beyond, mm-hmm. right? So that's a different sort of calculation. So you have to view those players in that sort of context.
So if you're drafting 104 later, you're trying to trade back most often?
It depends on the class. I mean, you know, the past two seasons, no, right? I mean, this year I tend to think that I can identify places in rookie drafts that I want to be, right? Because players that I want to target are there, right? So this year for me, I identified basically somewhere between 104 and 108. I was going to take Kerryon Johnson and Royce Freeman a lot, right? Yep. So that's sort of what I identified. So I wasn't going to trade out of that. And I think as you sort of come more into focus with the class, those things will become apparent. 2 years ago, it was Alvin Kamara, right? Alvin Kamara at 107. I either moved down to 107 or up to 107, right? But I was like, I am getting to 107 and I'm taking Alvin Kamara because I just identified him as the player. So I think the general rules are important, but I think that as the focus comes in, right, as you sort of get to rookie draft time, you've done all your scouting, you've done sort of your pick analysis, you have a good idea of sort of generally what to expect with picks, mm-hmm. you'll identify value players at those picks. And that's where I want to make a stand. And it depends on any particular year. You know, this year is going to be totally fluid. There's no consensus, right? Yep. And so people are like, are you trading out of picks? And at this point, I don't know, right? We've got a lot of time, and I do not know what's going to happen, right? Is, you know, Josh Jacobs could be a top 15 pick in the NFL draft, in which case, like, he might break the 101, right? I mean, that he's probably the 101 if that happens, you know, or he sort of falls into day two, and maybe he becomes a value at 104, right? Those sort of things are all possible, and so I don't know for this particular class what it's going to be. I think there's a lot of running backs that are a lot the same, and I'm going to avoid a lot of them, right? I'm just going to avoid a general class of running backs, and it's going to give me the opportunity to really sit and pound like maybe 6, 7, 8 guys in this class and just do it over and over again at specific valuations. That's typically how I approach rookie drafts, and I think this year is really going to be that class.
What do you do in the second round of rookie drafts?
Well, you know, I'm a very I'm a high believer in round two receivers, so I really bang away at them. No, it's obviously a reference to a recent appearance that I had. I think it matters on the class, but generally speaking, I think if you draft a running back, you're not doing it wrong. I think if you draft a wide receiver, a day two wide receiver, you have to be super careful about who they are, right? They have to be elite metric guys, right? Those are the round two receivers that hit.
Juju.
Or day two wide receivers that hit. You know, I'll include Cooper Kupp in that, right? But Cooper Kupp was like a historic producer in college. I mean, a historic producer. Don't make exceptions, right? That's how specific you need to be. You know, I was in, I think, 15 or 16 dynasty leagues last year, 15 or 16 rookie drafts. And in total, I spent, and I tend to be above the market share in rookie picks. And I'm not a guy that sells them off. In total, I selected 8 wide receivers. across all my leagues in with rookie picks. And there was only four receivers that I selected. Basically, half of those picks were Traquan Smith because he was a good value late in the second round. You know, I liked the metric profile. I really liked the landing spot. I liked all of that. And again, I'm not a landing spot picker guy, but when Sean Payton does something, I chase it, right? That's something that I think history has shown us that's a good idea. But I don't typically chase positional spots based on where they land, but for maybe two or three places, and that's one of them. You know, and the other players, I think I got two shares of Sutton. No, I got one share of Sutton, one share of Kirk, and two shares of James Washington in the early first. And I didn't spend more than 110 on any of those guys, right? So I was super selective on that. There are day two receivers that are interesting to me, but I think the cost is super critical and they have to be really good metric guys. So that's what I would point to. But take running backs a lot. Like if you're running back over, when in doubt, take a running back over receiver. That's a general rule. I think there was some value in guys like Mayfield last year.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was in a league where there's a bunch of UTHers and it's actually a public league, and maybe it just so happened to be like six or seven guys having UTH followers, and I got boxed out of everything. Like I took an absolute beating in that league, and it was brutal. I mean, it was as it was happening, people were like, I am not trading with you. And I was like, I'm trying to move up one spot to get Kalen Blash. And people were like literally telling me, I'm not trading with you. And it was the most, I have never been more frustrated in my life than that experience. And I got to 205 and I had 205 and 206 back to back. And Kalen Blash was gone, and I had 212 or maybe like 302 or something like that. So I was, Traquan Smith was a target there, and I sat there at those picks and I said, I don't think it's perfect, but I'm taking Baker Mayfield and I'm taking Lamar Jackson because they're the best players on my board. And you want to know what? Like I had Derek Carr, and it actually, I started those guys down the stretch and I made I played in the finals, right? So, you know, I sort of look at that and those things happen and don't get flustered, but typically in the second round of rookie drafts, what you're looking at is running backs or day one quarterbacks, or you know, day one tight ends are really good too.
My goal is to make Adam feel that frustrated.
You do every day I talk to you, so
it happens. And it was so painful. Like it was, I knew it was happening, and it might have even been collusion level happening. Like that's how painful it was. And but you just have to, you know, maybe those things don't happen to owners. You know, I was a mark in that league. There's no question that happened, but those things do happen. And right, don't get scared and run towards, hey, you know, I got to chase ADP because Anthony Moore's evaluation of that. That's the exact wrong thing to do in that situation.
Yeah, and I think you had mentioned, it might have been on the last time we had you on, but in the third round of rookie drafts, there are some very good values on tight ends and quarterbacks, actually. And I know that you talked about it in your book as well. And so the tight ends you should be looking for in the third round of rookie drafts, what's the key to grabbing those guys? Or to to look for, I should say.
I think round three and round four rookie picks, day two tight ends, day one quarterbacks, and running backs, right? And the running backs typically, you know, I want bigger guys is typically where I don't like tweeners, right? So either give me an elite receiving guy, like a Tariq Cohen type, that's interesting, or give me the big guys, right? You know, and I failed with a bunch of them, right? But you're going to miss a lot there. So, and honestly, if you take the running backs and they get cut, that's fine. Like you can move on, right? But I was taking a ton of Bo Scarborough, right? Because he sort of fit that, right? And he got cut, moved on. Hey, he actually resurfaced in Seattle. Who knows running backs? Seattle's pretty good at that, you know? So maybe he'll be interesting in the offseason. But, you know, so that's something that I really try and do. You know, day one quarterbacks. I mean, Josh Allen, the hand-wringing that happened on Josh Allen last year, you could get basically a top seven pick in the NFL draft in the fourth round of rookie drafts. That's crazy. And you know what? Like, I was part of that whole ragging on Josh Allen for 6 months because I didn't think he could throw a ball and hit anything. But you know what? Like, you look at the draft pedigree and you sort of look at what teams do when they spend that high a pick on somebody. They build around them and sort of and the Bills did it perfectly, and I can't believe I'm saying this, that they embraced what Josh Allen did, which is throw the ball down the field, spread the field, and let him run. Yeah. Right? Basically those two things. And he was a – I mean, if you trusted starting him down the stretch, he probably helped you win games because he was the quarterback two for like a seven-week span. And you could get him as the quarterback five in the fourth round of rookie drafts, right? That it, when those things happen, do that. You know, you look at the quarterbacks taken in round three of rookie drafts in the last like 5 years, you know, Russell Wilson going all the, you know, going farther back, but Russell Wilson, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, right? You just take these guys and people think, oh, I don't need quarterback, right? But that's exactly what you should be doing because you're embracing upside, right? If you're taking these guys, you're embracing the upside in a start one league, which is really what you're looking at quarterback. You know, Baker was a little bit higher than that, but these types of players can have a big impact, more so than if you just eliminate receiver from that conversation. I think you can find some guys. You know, day two tight ends are good bets in that range too.
All right. I think we've gotten through everything with the general strategy. So, Jordan, thanks for coming on. This was fun, and you got another two-part podcast out of us. So,
I know I like this. I like these stops.
So not only are you episode 40, you're also episode 41, and you currently hold the record for being the only person to have two-part podcasts. So, I'm not sure what you get for that. Maybe a plaque of, you know, Chris can make you it because he does nothing all day. So,
have I guessed it on 10% of your shows? That's something.
Yeah. You actually have. You have 10% of our episodes. So.
Yeah, and one thing too, like before we finish, there are about the book. I would say it's not overwhelming with numbers. So if you're not a numbers person or not a math person, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a history major, right? This isn't advanced. You know, this isn't advanced level calculus. You know, there's numbers in this, and there's a lot of strategy in this, but it's not anything that you can't. It's not too dense. And you know, if you don't, you know, one thing I said earlier, and I would really stress this to people, you might not be my style of owner in the sense of, hey, I'm not good at identifying running backs, or hey, I'm really good at identifying receivers, or hey, I'm really good at identifying quarterbacks. That's fine. Embrace that, right? Don't run from that. Embrace what you're good at, and it makes it more fun. But sort of if you get the book and sort of look at some of the general rules, it'll really guide A, how you value those decisions, and B, the types of players that you can really avoid. And I think sort of those two things, you know, I talk a lot about running backs because I think that that's something I'm good at and I like to do. But if you're not that, don't try and be something you're not. Look, you know, try and be better generally, but embrace what you're good at. And if you're really good at receivers, then that's fine, but just sort of know how to value them. That's what I would tell you about the book.
Well, Jordan, how can they find the book one more time?
Well, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty. And if you have questions about the book, you know, obviously we talked a lot about stuff here. You know, you can reach out to me on Twitter and we can talk in DMs. Like if you have questions about the book or anything like that. I don't have a ton of content on my website because I think, like I said before, I didn't want to give valuable information that people were, you know, trusting me to give them in the book. I didn't want to give it away to the general public because I didn't want to give people their edge. I didn't want to give people's edges away that were going to buy the book. So there's not a ton of content on the website, but it's at analytics@dynasty.com. There's some articles on there talking about some specific players, but you can look at that. You can sort of see some of the framework of what I did in the book, but analytics@dynasty.com is where you'll find that information. analytics@dynasty.com/shop is where you actually find the book. You can get the book for $30, immediate download. You can start winning trades and planning rookie drafts based around it. And if you're getting in a startup, now's the time to start preparing. You can immediately download it right now. And then if you want to get to the strategy session, it's $50 with the book. We'll get together, we'll talk, and we'll go through some of these things.
Right on.
Awesome.
Right on. Thanks again. Awesome.
This is always fascinating stuff. Love talking with you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate coming on. I mean, it's, you guys have become like a second home, and some places aren't quite as friendly or receptive to me. So I always appreciate coming here because I know I'll get a good reception from you guys and have a good time.
So I mean, Chris is a terrible person, so I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, I guess he's friendly to you, so that's good.
All right, well, I'm going to wrap it up. You can follow us on Twitter at Top Dog Dynasty. Send us an email, topdogdynasty@gmail.com, and subscribe. It's just a single click. You just got to click that button. Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. We appreciate everybody. Keep your leagues active. Go out and make some trades. We'll see you next time, man.
Peace.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Top Dog Dynasty. Follow us on Twitter at Top Dog Dynasty. Visit our website at topdogdynasty.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. You know you want to do it. Hit that subscribe button. Call your mom.